Close your eyes and imagine, if you will, that you are one of the so-called elite and wealthy robber barons who live a life of opulence and fortune that we will never know. Put yourself in their shoes for a moment. You awake in the morning as the sunlight is allowed in by one of your servants opening the heavy curtains. He stands by your bed, breakfast tray in his white gloved hands. Afterwards, a maid removes the tray while you don your favourite tailored suit, ready for your helicopter ride to the global headquarters of the bank you own for the monthly board meeting. During flight, you notice the crowded city underneath you and daydream about stepping on the ants you see scurrying to work in their steel coffins. The meeting ends with a decision to lower interest rates and encourage more borrowing, tightening your grip on the debt slaves. Your colleagues offer to meet you in the lounge for a brandy and cigars and toy with ideas on the next way to fuck with humanity for their amusement. You sip your 40-year-old brandy and then utter the words, "There's too many useless eaters out there." Your colleagues laugh and nod. "We need to do something about that." For decades and possibly centuries, the wealthy, powerful, and somewhat secretive families who bend society to their will have long thought of the masses as mere cattle. They feed off our livelihoods and our labour, all the while siphoning the collective wealth of the world into their coffers. They see the world's population as a blight on the planet. The so-called elite seek to keep humanity in check by holding us under their control grids as long as possible, in order to prevent us from actually thriving and achieving the possibility of rising up against their power structure. In this episode, we intend to shed light on the many forms of population control the system, establishment, and power brokers use against us right now, as well as possible avenues they may seek to implement in the future. Alright folks, it's time to grab a beer, strap yourselves in, and get ready for another mind-blowing episode of the General Knowledge Podcast. Today with me on the show is our good friend Ethan from Tot News, and of course Andy, who is here for the whole episode as well. Well lads, thanks for joining me today on episode 6, The Depopulation Agenda. In preparing for today's show, I gave each of our fellas a bit of homework to do, as there's many rabbit holes to venture down with this particular topic. So in this episode, Ethan's going to be taking us through the decline in male fertility in the Western world, as well as the destruction of the family unit and traditional family values in society as well. And he's going to be looking at the use of chemicals to aid in female sterilization and vaccines being used as a depopulation control mechanism, as well as perpetual war and fighting across the globe as conflict aids in reducing the population. And I'm going to be having a look at how they're poisoning us through our air, food, and water to create sickness, reduce not only our lifespan, but quality of life, and to increase our inability to basically have a family and procreate as well. With all those toxins and things they're pumping into us, mate, it's no wonder we're having so much trouble procreating.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so the first topic I've got here is water. Now, initially, I'd just like to mention that there's villages in Africa that would benefit greatly from having water to help benefit their life, whereas it's not in a sense of using it against them, but just giving these poor third world countries a simple water well would cost, it could only cost a few thousand dollars of our sort of currency, whereas you'll now have the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation will go into these third world countries and villages. Instead of giving them a water well, they'll give the entire village a round of vaccines for cholera or diphtheria or whatnot. And a lot of them end up having, resulting in sterilization there themselves and other acute diseases leading to death. So, in an example of where water could actually help someone, it's not given to them. Whereas the water that's given to us is now tainted and is harming us. And the way that it harms us, of course, is with the addition of the toxic waste byproduct that we call hydro or hexafluorosilicic acid, otherwise known as fluoride, that's put into our water, which is obviously a major problem. Because again, it's touted and it's promoted as fluoride being in the water, except it is not purely the compound of fluoride. It is, like I said, the toxic waste byproduct from the phosphate mining and aluminium production industries. And the toxic byproduct is that hydrofluorosilicic acid. Now, that is added to our municipal water supplies, and that particular product, boys, isn't like some sort of, you know, purified, clean, pharmaceutical-grade sort of additive that everyone thinks is similar to what's in our toothpaste or something, or for those that actually use fluoridated toothpaste. It's not. I mean, that's the big sort of myth there that people sort of don't realize. When you actually explain to people where this so-called fluoride comes from that's in our water, it is quite shocking, and you can see the looks on their face like, what? Why would they be putting this in our water? And it's very obvious. It's not going in our water to benefit us. It's going in our water pretty much to harm us, and it's getting rid of their toxic waste from the industry, which would otherwise cost them money to dispose of. I think we've talked about this in the past, that I think I did an article about this, Ethan. If an industry tries to dump fluoride or that particular fluoride, you know, chemical in a creek, it's environmental vandalism. If they want to try and sneakily dump it, you know, in a river somewhere, environmental vandalism. If they want to try and take it out and dump it in the ocean, environmental vandalism. However, add it to our municipal water supplies and it's a public health measure. So go figure, hey, mate.
That's exactly right, General.
Yeah, but what people don't realize is that fluoride is actually a known endocrine system disruptor. And our endocrine system regulates a lot of bodily functions, including our reproductive system and related hormone production. So that right there is another method which we would probably term as a soft kill that's used against us, because if you're adding something to our water supply, which we're all drinking, and there's only a few countries in the world that are doing this. It's I'm not going to label them now. People can go look it for themselves. But I mean, if you're adding known endocrine disruptors into the water supply, it's obviously going to have an effect on fertility rates and so forth and reproductive rates within our society. And that's one of the ways with which we're being harmed by this particular chemical. And again, it's sold to us under the guise of good oral health. So here we go. We've got another way water is used to control our population. Isn't as direct as that addition to fluoride. Although, did you have another comment on that fluoride, Ethan, before I go on?
Are you heading off fluoride?
Well, I will be shortly, but I wanted to just check to see if you had a...
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate your point, General. Fluoride dangers are real. To anyone out there that this may be a new concept to, they are very real, and there's lots of documented evidence out there. And as you said, General, we shouldn't be calling it fluoride. You know, it's not really, you know, the fluoride that you find, say, in natural spring water, for example. It's obviously this hydrofluorosic acid that we have in our water. But what they masquerade as fluoride, you know, it can damage health and fertility, destroys bones, and has, you know, effects on our teeth, even though we're told the opposite. You know, it's having effects on children with their puberty and hormone disruption, all of these things that come along. Yeah, absolutely. And it's all documented out there. And General, people don't realize it's not just in our water, this stuff. You know, you've got it in baby formula, canned soup. You've got it in things like soft drinks, soda pop. Yeah, it's in beer. It's everywhere. It's not just in our water that we're digesting as well. And that's where you start to question the bigger picture, is why is all of this stuff added to so many products on such a mass level? And as you said, General, it's there not for our benefit. It's there to harm us. Yep. Absolutely.
Yep, and that's right. That's the other thing that people don't realize too. This, they call it a public health measure, but it is literally mass medication, which they're trying to go for here. And with a mass medication effort like this, how can they control the dose? I mean, they can control the dose from where they put it into the actual water, although we know that they've had problems with that in the past by overdosing us in certain plants here in Brisbane, even with massive amounts of overdosing us with fluoride. However, they, like I said, they can't actually control the dose with which we're consuming. Myself, for example, I work, outside in the sun all day, and I drink a lot more water. Although, in my particular case, I only drink filtered water that I have from a reverse osmosis filter at home. So I'm not drinking the fluoridated horrible tap water. But there's a lot of blokes out there on building sites and whatnot all around the country, and they're all drinking that fluoridated water a lot more than perhaps someone who maybe just work in an office or a part-time for the day or whatever, you know what I mean? So those workers, they're getting a ton more fluoride, in their doses. So how can they control it? Quite simply, they can't, so they shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, exactly, General. That's a great point. You know, people, someone that's at the gym smashing down 2 liters or more per hour, compared to someone working in an office, where is the dosage? And it just fits this same notion, General, about this one size fits all, this medical establishment has created. They do the same with vaccines. They do the same with other products like pharmaceuticals that they give us. All of these so-called recommendations and false regulatory bodies that, let all of this stuff slide, when really, when you look at it, General, it really doesn't have any logical basis behind it when you actually look at how they're actually systemizing it. So you've got to ask the question, why are they systemizing it like this? And it always goes back to the original theme of this episode, and that is the sterilization agenda, the dehumanization agenda, and what looks like a depopulation agenda, General. And it all starts with our food and our water and all of the things that we're digesting.
Yeah. And when you start looking at all these things and you add it all up, to me, and probably to yourself, it does seem to be a clear attack on our human reproductive capabilities. And the only reason for that would be to reduce the world's population, because they have a clear population agenda. That is part of the globalist agenda, if you want to call them that, or the power brokers in our society, the elite, whatnot. It does definitely appear to be a hidden agenda behind everything, and we're starting to see the effects of it now. And we'll probably we'll probably go over a few of those particular ways in which we are seeing it a little bit later in the episode as well, from your point of view.
Absolutely.
But I'll move on now, mate, just with regards to water still. So there's another way in which water is used to control their population, but it's not as direct as, like I said, putting fluoride in the water and poisoning us directly like that. Everyone may notice, like we even just talked about then, the promotion of drinking bottled water is pretty rampant right now. And to a degree, yes, you are probably better off drinking natural spring water over the tap water. However, the issue now is that they're attacking us once again, and it's in the plastics that the bottled water is coming in. So we're being marketed this bottled water, but they've circumvented any of the health benefits pretty much, because the plastic water bottles contain harmful, what are called bisphenols, or bisphenols, however you want to pronounce it. Everyone blew up many, many years ago over BPA, bisphenol A, being in all the products and kids' water bottles and all that sort of stuff. Now you're seeing, and I noticed it as a father as well, you're seeing BPA-free labels on everything whenever you buy a plastic water bottle. And it's a bit of a misnomer, that's just another marketing ploy, because, a parent who's perhaps conscious of this might go and purchase that product. However, what they don't realize is that all of these plastics contain a whole host of bisphenols. There's A, B, C, the list goes on. There's heaps of them. You can actually look this up. I did an article on this a few years ago on realnewsaustralia.com. So, the thing is with these bisphenols, all of them are what are known as estrogen-mimicking endocrine disruptors. So once again, targeting our reproductive ability. So not only are we drinking out of these containers, and we're also storing food in them, we're cooking in them in the microwave and whatnot, and these bisphenols are leaching from the plastics from when they're made, and we're eating them, we're consuming them, we're drinking them. It's going into our system. They are harming us. I think, yes, they definitely are. So in future, we probably do expect them to add even more chemicals into our water supply. However, they've even floated the idea of adding, I think you probably heard this, they've even floated the idea of adding lithium to our water supply as well. Have you heard of that one, Ethan?
Wow, General. No, I haven't actually heard of that, but it doesn't surprise me. You know, people are so unaware of everything that we have just within our water, whether it be some of these sodium products that we have, the chlorine that's in there, all of these chemicals that are put in there. And as you said, some of these containers that they're obviously put into these bottles and whatnot. So it would not surprise me if there is lithium being floated around, because as history has demonstrated, General, you can just put this stuff in the water, tell the people it's for this reason, and they'll just go along with it like nothing is happening at all. You know what I
Yeah,
mean?
it's for our good.
It's crazy.
It's for our health. You know, I mean, didn't they even we saw an article that we probably both shared just the other day that was released from a mainstream media source. I'm pretty sure even ABC here in Australia shared it, telling and advising all of us to run our tap water for about 30 seconds before we start using it because of high amounts of lead have been detected in normal tap water. I mean, this comes right back to adding this hydrofluorosilicic acid into the water supply because that is known to be able to strip away the basically the components of which they use in our metal pipe in our networks, and it's actually leaching and stripping lead away from these pipes, and it's going straight into our water supply once again, and we're drinking this unless you're filtering, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's unbelievable, General. And I remember we did share that article earlier in the week, and you know, it actually, when you read that article, it actually says that the e-health system or whatever it is actually released this warning back in July, but they're only just telling us now, the mainstream media,
Wow, so you had a
to
good 4 months of drinking lead. Excellent.
It's absolutely unbelievable. And you know, I always like to bring up a test that I like to do with people. And what I do is, there's a lot of good non-fluoridated brands that you can get. I like to get Puree from, you know, Woolworths or Coles or whatever's there. But obviously, you can filter your own. But just going and getting a simple bottle of Puree non-fluoridated water, pour a cup of that, and then you pour a cup of tap water with all of these chemicals that we're talking about. And I just like to give it to people and see, can you taste the difference? You know, and it's every single person immediately tastes the difference between these two bits of water, even though they look the same, they appear the same. One's been filtered through a triple filtration process, the other has been added with all of these chemicals and all of the other shit that's coming through, you know, the pipes and whatnot. And I give it to these people, and almost 100% of them, General, do recognize the difference between it. But what was surprising to me is, a lot of the people that have tasted the non-fluoridated water for the first time actually don't like it, because, you know, they're actually used to and accustomed to having the fluoridated chemicals, the same way, you know, you'd go to McDonald's and people get addicted to fast food because of all the chemicals in it. People are addicted to this syrup, and they've become accustomed to this taste that's masquerading as water. And I just thought that both parts of that simple little trick that I like to do with people, just to see what they think, I thought both of those parts were fascinating, General.
Yeah, absolutely. I've done the same test with friends and family that come over. You know, you give them the tap water and you give them the filtered water, and I don't know about you, mean, but when I go to someone's place or whatnot, and they run or give you a glass of water, I can smell the difference in the tap water compared to the water I'm used to. It just has a particular odor, and it just tastes overchlorinated. And oh man, yeah, I just steer away, well away from it. I even try to limit my shower times because I just can't stand the smell of the water in the shower. You know, you just know you're absorbing it in your skin as well. You're like, oh, get me out of this, get me out of this. Yeah,
Absolutely,
it's no
yeah.
good, man. So
No,
there's
it's
yeah.
bad
There's
stuff.
lots of ways they're messing with us with regards to the water system, but we'll move on to I've got food as the next part here, and I'm going to kick this off with. I'm not sure if you've heard of this, but in December in 1974, the U.S. government made third world population reduction a national security issue. The operation plan was titled National Security Study Memorandum 200. Now, of course, everyone's favorite, Mr. Henry Kissinger, was one of the authors of this memorandum. He noted in the plan, he wrote that the IMF and the World Bank loans to these third world countries must be given with strict parameters that state that their nations carry out aggressive population control programs such as sterilization. Now, Kissinger recommended that food also be used as a weapon in his Food for War plan, which was also noted as a helpful depopulation tool. But I'm not sure if, I think, have you heard of this National Security Study Memorandum 200 before, Ethan?
I have briefly heard of that, General. I think that obviously had to do with, they were talking about projections in the 1970s about obviously where population was growing. And I think they listed a few countries in that report, that like Thailand and all of these third world nations that, funnily enough, today have all of these measures implemented against them. But they named all of these countries back in the 1970s. And wasn't it only classified and like it was hidden or something, General, until like the 1990s or something, wasn't it? People weren't allowed to get access to it till like 25 years later.
Correct. Yep. But it just goes to show you that that's the kind of foresight and planning that the powers that be have been having. You know, they were thinking about world population reduction back in the 1970s, because that was apparently a national security issue to the United States, you know. And of course, Henry Kissinger, who rubbed shoulders with some of the big major, you know, Rothschilds and Rockefellers of the world, you know, he's their stooge, basically. So, of course, if you're going to get someone to put a plan like that through, he's your man, really.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so there you go. It's all there. That's not, conspiracy conjecture or anything at all. That is, you can literally go and type that in yourselves, folks. National Security Study Memorandum 200, and check it out for yourselves. Look, our toxic food supply is basically laced also with these neurodegenerative chemicals and immunosuppressive chemicals. The human food supply is intentionally laced with these toxic chemicals that impede brain function, immune function, and fertility. So, and this is a known fact. There's a whole host of food additives that have been allowed to be circulated and basically consumed by the public for many years, until, you know, it took sort of third party type of organizations to take a closer look at these things and then say, oh, wait a minute, we can't have these additives in there causing brain malfunction in kids or something, you know what I mean? So it's funny that these big groups like the FDA or the Therapeutic Goods Administration or Food Standards Australia and New Zealand, they'll allow all of these things to go through, and only bit by bit if there's further studies done by another organization instead of the studies that have been provided by the manufacturers of these chemical ingredients themselves, who always say, yep, they're good. I mean, it always takes someone else to look at them again and go, wait a minute, maybe it's these additives in these food and these preservatives and whatnot that are actually causing all of this detrimental effects on our kids and ourselves as well. But the other main issue we've got is GMOs. Now, I've got a quote here by a GMO industry executive, right? This was one that was put up on Twitter. I did have a screenshot of it, but I mean, you can probably type this in. You might be able to actually find a screenshot of this from someone else who saved it as well. But This is what this person said. Now, they're a GMO industry executive. It says, if this shit causes infertility, awesome. The world is overpopulated. This is why GMO is actually saving the planet. I am doing humanity a fucking favor. End quote. Now, that right there from an industry insider saying that GMOs are causing infertility and that's awesome, and that, you know, they also believe that the world is overpopulated, and let's keep pushing GMOs in their eyes. Oh, I mean, it's just unbelievable. Look, we had a gentleman by the name of Bob Phelps on episode 3 of this podcast. Now, Bob is he's like the founder and director of a GM ethics organization here in Australia. And they have fought to have what's known as the precautionary principle put in effect in regards to genetically modified organisms, whereby that if they have any doubts whatsoever about its safety or that too little is known about it, we shouldn't use it. However, as Bob let us know on episode 3, he said, however, the industry and the lobby groups and even government bureaucrats are choosing to ignore this precautionary principle and go headstrong into embracing GMOs. They're messing with the plant and animal DNA in order to create, like hybrid and different crops like soy, so that it's resistant to pesticides like Roundup. And then they're having it absolutely saturated by, glyphosate, which is Roundup, by this chemical right before harvest, which then means we're consuming, you could call it trace amounts, but it's even more than that. It's higher levels of this particular chemical, of this poison, and it's in our food, and it's leading to a whole host of health issues, and it's making us sick. It's causing so many problems with ourselves. It's yet another soft kill method of population control. You keep the population sick, you keep them to the point where they can't procreate, we can't have kids, we can't replace ourselves. If we can't do that, then of course the population is going to start to dwindle off, and you're letting certain, your family line will then end with you, basically, if you don't have kids. You know what I mean? If you've got no other siblings and you're the only one left in your family, there goes Ethan Nash, you know what I mean? So if you're too sick from eating all this crap, mate, you can't have kids. You know, it's so much harder for us. And this is happening all around the world, you know what I mean? We're consuming toxic chemicals and poisons in our food supply, and this stuff is, it's allowed to be in there, and there's only a handful of these small, non-government organizations and these types of ethics organizations like what Bob directs that are trying to fight for us to say, hey, let's put in this precautionary principle, let's take another look at it. If it's no good, or if we don't know enough about it, then let's not use GMOs, for example, because we just don't know what the long-term effects of it are. Many speculate that long-term effects of GMOs are going to cause major issues with our DNA and our bloodlines and mutations. Who knows? It's just no one knows enough about it, basically, mate. So,
yeah.
I don't know. What are your thoughts on that whole GMO as a tool of population control?
Yeah, it's bad stuff, General. And you'll have to forgive me for feeling a little bit like Winston out of 1984, mate, where they're sitting there and they're eating food and they think it tastes like real food, it feels like real food, looks like real food, but it's not real food at all, and that just seems to be a recurring theme here in the Western world and other places, especially now with the expansion of genetically engineered foods, these GMOs that are out there. And for those who haven't listened, I definitely recommend going back and listening to episode 3 of the General Knowledge podcast, where we did have Bob Phelps on the show, and it was a fantastic episode going through some of the dangers. But what interests me is the story of genetically modified organisms, General. Obviously it's very big, but it sort of started and kicked off in the 1990s, and it started with rats. And from my memory, the rats they didn't even want to eat the genetically modified tomatoes that they were given. They were force fed them, and then all of a sudden FDA government officials just approved it. And fast forward years later, and you've got companies like the US National Academy of Sciences saying that GMO foods might not detect unintended changes in the composition of their food in their regulation. And you just see that all of the patterns that have led up to this point just fit the perfect mold of everything that we were talking about before, with fluoride, with vaccines, all of this broad, loose, sort of almost like a phantom, it is this illusion that there is regulatory systems, that there is thorough testing going on, when all of a sudden this just pops up. It's being rampant all across the world, and we've got lots here in Australia, lots of GM wheat, lots of GM foods, we've got like 64 test sites around the country where there's known examples of crops taking over other farmers' fields. You know what I mean? Like, there was that big court case in WA where Steve Marsh, he was a natural farmer, and his neighbor's organic farm took over. Just the plants just like almost just attached themselves to his crops and killed them all out, and there was a big court case over it. So
it was the other way around, actually. Steve was the organic farmer, and his neighbors had a standard farm, and his seed was coming over the fence and breeding into his, and he lost his certification as a organic farmer because of it.
Yeah,
So he
no,
had to get rid of all his crops.
it's very interesting, it's unbelievable, but yeah, it's definitely bad stuff out there, General.
Yeah, definitely, mate. And look, last but not least, and I unfortunately didn't have as much prepared on it, but I only had a little bit left to go, which was the other form. We've got food, we've got water, and look, the air is the last form that I was doing a bit of homework on with regards to what they're using in the skies to help curb population. And we know that look, air pollution itself is very, very high at the moment. Not in particular areas, but mainly in, of course, the urban and centralized areas where all our big cities are. We've got a lot of air pollution, and of course a lot of sickness as a result. We've got, where the skies are being sprayed non-stop. We've got chemtrails going on. They've got known, I mean, I guess the colloquial term it was calling it chemtrails, but I believe the main scientific way they're calling it is, stratospheric aerosol reflecting. I think there's one of the terms they call it, or geoengineering is the other term as well. So they're talking a lot lately. I've seen a few articles being put up in a lot of mainstream news sources talking about how they want to start reflecting the sunlight. And of course, the only way they can do that is to fill the sky with even more photochemical components to try and reflect sunlight. So basically, they want to spray the skies and blanket us with who knows what. And this stuff, does everyone think it's just going to sit in the sky for, I mean, let's put aside, for example, that blocking the sun is not a good thing. We need more sunlight. Vitamin D deficiency is a major problem, which is leading to so many health issues. So if you block more sunlight, we're getting less of that sunlight. You're going to cause even more health problems with people. But
The
this stuff.
global warming, General. Global warming, though.
Oh, well, yes, my mistake. Sorry, I forgot. The planet is warming, and we need to cool it down by blocking the sun.
Yeah, come on, General. Gee.
Can't they just tax us instead? Oh, wait a minute, they're already doing that. Oh, mate, look, we laugh about it, but this stuff is really going on right now, isn't it, mate?
It's absolutely
And
ludicrous.
to think that they're not only floating these ideas, but they're actually doing it, and they're being funded by massive, big global corporations and governments around the world, looking at geoengineering as a form of saving us. However, I do think that is not the actual intention behind it. I do believe that is they know it's going to cause problems, and I do believe that that is the actual end game. They want it to cause many more issues because, they've got the money and everything else behind themselves to, I guess, keep themselves safe from all of this stuff. But we certainly don't, and a lot of us are probably going to be the ones dropping off at the end of the day.
Yeah, absolutely, General. And it's well documented, and people, even a lot of the geoengineering crowd, don't realize how vast the geoengineering scope is. If you actually look at it, it's very well documented. They're just floating these concepts now, but these have been, for well over a century
Oh,
in practice. You know what I mean? I wrote an article on TOTTnews.com talking about the Australian companies that are manipulating our weather and talking about, the first test by the Royal Australian Air Force back in the 1950s and all of the articles that were out there and all of these things that they're doing to our environment. And the geoengineering, summits and groups that are out there, they talk about genetically modified trees. They talk about, I mean, not genetically, well, GMO, geoengineered, all the same thing, but they talk about geoengineered trees. They talk about geoengineering in terms of space reflectors, which is now the concepts that they're floating, but they've had these documented all throughout the 20th century. And it just seems like they're just slowly implementing all of these measures into us. And it just reminds me of, it's who's going to be the Mr. Burns that comes along and blocks out the sun completely, General.
Yeah,
You know what I
absolutely. It's
mean?
straight out of a Simpsons episode, isn't it?
It's almost that comical, you know what I mean? It's just absolutely ridiculous, mate.
Yeah. I mean, there's even articles back on realnewsaustralia.com. If you just simply type in the term geoengineering, you'll find, I think there's even a link to which I reblogged of one of yours. There's a whole bunch of geoengineering stuff that we've had up there. originally put one up way back in May 14th, 2013, called Look Up, Speak Up, the Chemtrail Issue, and we sort of went over quite a few of the points of what we just talked about then. And again, yeah. We can sort of bring that all back, and you know, when you start following down that rabbit hole and you follow the breadcrumbs, you keep getting to that same conclusion. In it's all to do with trying to reduce the world's population. It's the only logical outcome that it can come down to.
Yeah,
as a motive, it, absolutely. All, you know.
Yeah, it definitely, to the extent that it's going to be a full spectrum control. You know what I mean? That's almost playing God, general. When you're messing with sunlight, you're messing with the environment, you're messing with our food. You know, that's almost humans completely interfering with the natural world around us. You know what I mean? It really is. When you take a big step and look at this, it really is something that's very, very vast. And when you actually realize how vast all of this control goes in terms of all of these topics that we're talking on, you can just see, you know, that it's not, once you realize how vast it is, you've got to realize that this can only come from these type of sources. You know what I mean? And I hope that's what we're, you know, gonna lead into in the back half of the episode, general, some of these topics. But, you know, just touching on that, you can just see that all of these links always link back, and it's always for the same reasons, pushing its past us for convenience or to improve the planet or to save the planet, all of these notions that they give us, when in reality, you know, the GMOs aren't going to solve world hunger. They can do that if they want to. The fluoride in the water isn't helping our teeth. You know, there's proven methods out there to do it without us. All of these things aren't happening for the reasons they tell us. And you know, from that, at very least, our listeners out there, I hope, are in a position where they do not trust some of these things. So when they tell you GMOs are good, when they tell you vaccines are good, you can just look and see, general, there's a track record of them lying and being wrong about it. Yeah. And that's ultimately the point there, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, like I say on my website, you know, you've got to read between the lies, because it's lie after exactly. lie after lie. And if you can actually decipher what they're talking about and read between that, then you might actually find the truth and the real agenda behind all of this. Well, that's pretty much about it for all of my topics, mate, so we might push on, and if you wouldn't mind kicking off some of yours, mate.
Yeah, general, thanks for that. And yeah, it does tie in very nicely, because as you said, there is all of these underlying factors, whether it be fluoride or food or the genetically modified attack on us, which, as we know, causes, you know, autoimmune diseases to rise, infertility, you know, things like gastrointestinal problems.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And chronic diseases, you know, we've got all of those things that are very tied in to that. But I wanted to focus here today on some of the underlying things behind it, some of the structure and really some of the programs and concepts that are out there in terms of population control, of what I call the dehumanization and sterilization agenda, which we're seeing going on and is a result of some of these topics that we're touching on, general. And I wanted to talk about fertility. And it's not just us saying it, it's not just us going on tangents talking about fertility and whatnot. There is a lot of documented evidence out there that does suggest that things like food, things like fluoride are having an effect, especially not just in the third world, but on Western countries. And specifically, I was very interested by a new report that came out. And this was a combination of a body of work here, general, and Andy, but what it revealed, that sperm counts are actually dropping in Western countries among men. And this includes North America, Australia, New Zealand, countries in Europe. And it says that it's substantially dropped over the years. It actually says that in less than 40 years, collective sperm count among Western men has declined more than 50%.
Nah, sorry. I had to do it. Sorry, man. Go on.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yes, no, but this study, this did interest me because, you know, you see it everywhere. It's not just all of the documented stuff that we're talking about. You know, boys, you see it everywhere just from your own observations and senses. But It was actually published in the journal Human Reproduction Update, and it showed that the continued decline doesn't appear to be leveling off. So what they said was this was the first of its kind to do a meta regression analysis, and that's what interests me, because it wasn't just some underfunded little sort of project that hasn't really touched on it. They actually did a proper one, and what they did was they actually combined 7,500 studies on the topic, and they went through a category and then found 185 rather that actually met their criteria. So think, that actually properly gave an analysis of it, and then they judged those. And so what they'd come to say was that a 50 to 60% decline in men in North America, Europe, Australia, and New Zealand, and they say that this was significant public health implications would come of these results. And they were talking about some of the underlying factors that cause it. Now, there were a couple of quotes in this study from other male fertility experts that spoke to it that said that it helps confirm what they had suspected for a long time now in this sort of field. And I've got a quote here from a bloke called Enric Schistermann. So I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. Hello, if you're listening, mate. He is the chief of epidemiology branch at the National Institute of Child Health and Human Development at the National Institutes of Health. And he said, quote, that this has been a recognized phenomenon for over 50 years privately. He said there has never been a systematic review of the literature as this analysis has done. And he says, I think its confirmation is well done, and that this is not that this is a serious problem. Now, the study itself didn't explain why sperm counts might be dropping in this group of men, but what they did was they based several theories on prior research performed by the study authors that they analyzed. And what they found was a common theme that all of these authors in the 185 studies said that it has been associated with environmental and lifestyle factors, including chemical exposures, adult pesticide exposures, smoking, stress, and things like obesity. And as you can see right there, General, right from a study, a major study that has been released in this field, you can see that the general theme that they come to is that it is the direct result of all of these things that we're talking about, food, water. All of these things are causing a 50 to 60% decline in men's fertility over the last 40 years. And General, they're actually now recommending that males that turn 18 actually freeze their sperm, because it's not going to be able to work soon because of how much it's actually declining. And this was extremely interesting to me, because I'm very, very, very interested in the study of eugenics. And this ties in perfectly, boys. But before I go into that, I just wanted to get your thoughts on this study, General. And Andy, I'll throw to you first, General. Have you heard of this study? Have you heard of this basic notion of sperm counts dropping in Western men? And what do you think about the underlying ties that it has to these themes that we're talking about?
It's a definite depopulation agenda there. No, I haven't heard of that study. That is a good find. Hang on to that one for future reference for sure. But definitely this concept and the notion that there's a decline in the sperm count of Western society, absolutely. And to the point where not only have we heard of it, but it is being shoved down our throats. And what I mean by that is, just probably maybe 3 nights ago, it was a bit of sort of late night TV. Well, actually, the TV was on while I was jotting down notes and doing a bit of research on articles and things. And I saw this ad come up, and it was an ad for Aussie blokes saying that they need more sperm donations. There's a company out there saying, yep, it will pay you. It's like giving blood, all this sort of stuff. It's not uncouth and dirty. It's just like giving blood, come and see us, and we need your sperm donations. There's such low sperm counts. We need your sperm donations. And it was reiterated several times. I'm going, oh my God, I haven't seen this ad before, but I mean, now they're at that point where there's ads on TV saying, hurry up, we need your goddamn sperm, because there's so many families out there that can't have kids. And the other reason, the other way, sorry, that they push this down our throats is because, I don't know how many TV shows you guys have seen, but I can tell you now, there's a few sitcoms out there where there'll be a couple or something on the sitcom, excuse me, or even in the drama show, and it'll be, oh, you know, Jim and Betty can't have kids, oh, she's sterile, oh, he's shooting blanks, oh, you know, they need to adopt, oh, and then they go down this avenue because, you know, oh, should we adopt, oh, maybe we should do in vitro, or when you get a sperm donor, let's go choose some sperm donors. Oh, this guy's an actual rocket scientist. You know what I mean? Like, this is on TV all the time, talking about how there's such low sperm counts and the reproductive abilities of ourselves is declining. And they're, you know, art imitates life. You know what I mean? So it's real. This is actually happening. And that's one of the ways that it's being done. What do you reckon, Andy? You there, bro?
Hey, boys. Yep. Yeah, interesting conversation. Listening to what you're talking about with TV too, Lee, isn't it amazing the infertility programs that are in the Western world? Like how often, how many millions and billions of dollars would infertility programs be making in the Western world?
Yeah, good point.
It must be a huge industry. Huge.
It is, and they suck you into tens of thousands of dollars. Yeah, like you're saying, they bleed you dry, and they make you do visit after visit after visit to try and have a kid. You know what I mean? Because this is happening so often.
Yeah. So
it's
generally, I like to follow where the money goes. You know, and then you generally find out a lot of the agendas and what's going on. But
good point.
But you know, like. Yeah, I mean, yeah, depopulation is one thing, but the feeling that I get too is that industry is making money on the way out as well. So not only is there an agenda, is somebody also wants to profit from that agenda at the same time. So these industries are. are absolutely insane.
Put yourself in their shoes, and that's exactly how they think, mate. Like what we were talking about at the start, that's what they do.
Yeah, and it's funny too. Sorry, did you want me to talk more, Lee? Or
I was just I'm gonna let Ethan continue on.
Yep.
No, you're right. I just wanted to continue that on. It's unbelievable what you see in you know, obviously media and television and Hollywood and especially the scientific community now. And, you know, we talk about infertility, but we can go to the broader topics of things like Planned Parenthood, all of these programs that are out there. You know, you've all of these, IMF treatments or whatever they are. IVF, whatever they are now, that are is so popular amongst, you know, women and all of these type of things, this genetic sort of scientific mutation that's also followed with the media spin. It just seems like it's a double programming of the masses here. And it's interesting that you raise that point about the ads general. It's just so blatant in our face every single day, and people are falling for this and thinking that this is normal, mate.
It is the normalization of our infertility.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic way to put it. And as I said, I'm very interested in eugenics and some of the underlying things that are associated behind this. And I wrote an article on TOTTnews.com that explored some of the eugenic history here in Australia. And I just wanted to touch on that and sort of tie it into it and then maybe open it up for some of a broader discussion on some of the underlying structure behind it. But for those who are not aware of what eugenics is, it's this basic notion that science is centered around improving a human population by things like controlled breeding.
You pause.
Increase what they call desirable heritable.
You dropped off then after you said controlled breeding.
Control breeding and methods to increase the occurrence of what they call heritable characteristics. So what I've done on TOTTnews.com, for those who just think that this is some offshore sort of global conspiracy, this deeper thing that's out there. No, this is documented here in Australia, in Melbourne specifically. Eugenicists rose in the early 20th century and linked with important political figures in this country. And it's a span in Australian history that's it's largely forgotten about here. And one person that was influential in that is a bloke called Richard Berry. And he was a professor of anatomy at Melbourne University from 1903 to 1929. And what his work was based upon was measuring people's heads, things like that, in pursuit of his theory that like things like a small head indicated that a person had low intelligence. So, you know, this basic notion that they're exploring humans and what they mean and related sort of topics. And this led to the formation of what was the Eugenic Societies of Victoria and New South Wales. And they even introduced mental deficiency bills in Parliament in 1926, 1929 and 1939, which would target people like slum dwellers, alcoholics, people that they considered lesser people of society, going back to this notion again from your intro, General. Mm-hmm. And it targeted these people as mental deficiency just based on their status. And today we're seeing some of the lasting effects of these programs, but when you look back through the history of where these come from, this depopulation agenda, you can see that some of these lasting effects, boys, like the sperm count, the food that's coming through it, it all centers behind this political, scientifically driven oligarchy that believes that they can dictate what humanity does and what humanity is. And it seems from this large body of evidence that not only are they making us sterile and breeding us through population and all this type of stuff, but it just seems like it's heading towards what we're talking about with this depopulation agenda. And it's very interesting. I just wanted to touch on that, boys, because I wanted to throw sort of an open sort of wind here, because, you know, we talk a lot about some of the surface sort of levels here, but I thought this would be a good way to tie into Bill Gates and whatnot eventually. But just this basic notion, fellas, that this is documented. It's not only just documented that it is having an effect today on us through studies like this, but the people responsible are the people that supposedly are here to protect you from it. And that's documented as well. And that's what I wanted to get out and sort of open the floor up for a little bit of a discussion on some of the underlying structure behind it, because it just seems like this has been a well-oiled machine, General, for quite some time. And these lasting effects aren't just happening by chance.
No, well, you're familiar with the documentaries How and Why Big Oil Conquered the World, and that was by James Corbett from the Corbett Report. Now, I believe it's the second one, Why Big Oil Conquered the World. They talked about the eugenics programs in that one as well, because this all ties back to the big Rothschild, Rockefeller power brokers back in the day, because these are the guys that believed and backed and supported and funded these eugenics movements. You know, they helped start the societies and all of these things. And, you know, they were, like you said, with the legislation back in the early 1900s in our own country, they were trying to do this in America as well. They would declare people feeble-minded, you know, as part of a eugenics program. And if you were declared feeble-minded, you were literally taken away from your family. I mean, you could be declared and you were locked up in some sort of, you know, facility, or you were forcibly sterilized. That was written into some of the laws. And I think I'm probably going to get this wrong, but I think Virginia, the state of Virginia over there, they actually had sterilization laws. So if you were declared feeble-minded, you were taken away, and you were forcibly sterilized against your will, because that was the law.
Mm.
You know, and these were backed by these big power-broking rich families, you know, because this was their belief system, that these people are the useless eaters, useless breeders. You know, so you could be declared feeble-minded if you had a stutter. You were declared feeble-minded if you had, you know, epilepsy, or if you were a drunk. You know what I mean? If you had, you know, a family history of crime. You know, if you were caught stealing, you know, you were declared feeble-minded. It was they tied it to so many things. You know, that was one of the ways they did it, and that unfortunately, people wised up to it, and that the law was, I think, it was repealed and overturned. Luckily enough, because it didn't gain momentum back then. It was a little bit declared unpopular, and actually, I think it was around the time of World War II with, you know, Adolf Hitler and his eugenics, you know, the Übermensch race, you know, you know, blonde hair, blue eyes, even though he wasn't, but he tried to promote that sort of, you know, eugenics system again, and because Hitler was trying to make that, you know, that was one of his, you know, standing points with his German people. People started to see that, so it lost popularity within America, and they no longer called it eugenics. So they relabeled it. They changed the name to microbiology, or they I can't remember the term they use now, but they literally just changed the terminology of eugenics. They don't call it eugenics anymore. There are other names for it to disguise it, but it's literally the same people who are running these same societies and scientific groups and all this sort of stuff. It's just eugenics by another name. Andy?
Exactly, mate.
Andy, what are your thoughts, mate?
Yeah, look, I'm just listening to you boys talk. It's very interesting. I get a strong feeling that we're heading towards manufactured children, that the state will actually produce the children for a population, artificially made.
Well, isn't,
so, didn't, I mean, I, Phelps, I guess...
Didn't Bob Phelps heading, of the GM Ethics, yeah. Andy, share an article that I shared just recently about that, how China is now one of the first nations to produce GM babies or something or other? I saw that
That's right. Touched on it. So wouldn't it make sense that, you know, like an agenda many decades ahead of now would be to eventually eradicate women having natural babies, but to actually like produce a manufactured population that is maybe like a little bit more complicit and designed in the right way and, you know, a bit more docile and just the right mix of attitude and the right kind of strength for certain jobs and everything. Wouldn't that be the correct target for eugenics?
That's sort of brave. Yeah. That's Brave New World, isn't it? That's right out of Brave New World. You got the alphas, the betas, and you know, what are the other ones called? You know, what are the
epsilons?
The lower levels. Yeah.
Yes. Straight out. No, of it's alpha. Funny.
Are we not seeing the beginnings of that?
Absolutely.
Yes. Exactly, and it's brilliant that you brought that up, General, because I was just about to touch on that because it is Brave New World, and Aldous Huxley wrote Brave New World, which touched on the concepts of what they called intelligence-based social hierarchies, you know, and what they talked about was scientific developments in things like reproductive technology, things like sleep learning, psychological manipulation, you know. They used classical conditioning to convince these people that this was a world of utopia in this book. And a fun fact about that is people know about that book, but they don't really know about Aldous Huxley and the Huxley family. And it's very funny that people don't know that Julian Huxley from the Huxley family was actually a prominent member of the British Eugenics Society back in the day. And has always been tied to people like Darwin. Yeah.
I know Aldous Huxley, I'm pretty sure, was referred to as Darwin's bulldog. You know, Charles Darwin, the father of Darwinism, basically, and natural selection and so forth. I'm pretty sure they referred to Aldous Huxley as Darwin's bulldog because, you know, he was his man, you know, and there you go. You just tied it right back into that too.
Exactly. And it's funny. It's just funny that Huxley would write a book that talks about the exact same methods of control that they're incorporating today. And as you said, we're heading towards a world, Andy, that was a good point that you made, that is straight out of Orwell's 1984, where the sexes are against each other and they're talking about getting rid of the reproductive urge and soon to be the reproductive organs. And this is because they've been manipulated to believe that. So as you can see, this is all of these characters that are producing these concepts. It's not that hard to work out what is happening. And when you tie it with some of the evidence that we have here, fellas, it really is undeniable. And it's interesting to me because, you know, I'm very skeptical now of the greater structure, you know, the so-called globalist, all of these narratives. And it just seems like, you know, obviously the good spin is we can get away from all of these things, but now we've got companies like Google and Facebook and all of these companies that are talking about advancing neurotechnology. So it seems like the people that do avoid this depopulation agenda are going to be sucked into a hyper reality of this digital world where we're going to, you know, fuse with AI. Facebook are talking about putting Facebook interfaces into our brain. Google is spending billions of dollars to cure death and life extension technology and all of this stuff. It seems like we are headed towards a brave new world scenario, fellas, and it all starts with this eugenics program that's been unfolding before our eyes, General. What say you?
Mate, it is a scary thought, but when you actually take a step back and look at it, and you can literally see the plan unfolding right before our eyes. Countless examples of it all over the place, and you're right. I'm sure there are patents available to look up online right now, where Google and Facebook and whatnot have, or even DARPA, whoever they are that are doing these, have filed these patents for this precise technology that you're talking about. You know what I mean? A lot of it's already out there. I mean, I know there's patents you can look at, for example, where they want to use the televisions or the telescreens to broadcast mind manipulation techniques via the frequency and the brightness and the flashing and all that sort of stuff. You know what I mean? These patents already exist. Even with our own lights above our heads, they can adjust flicker rates and so forth to implant messages and, you know, make us hungry or make us thirsty or make us tired. These things do exist. I mean, you just got to look them up. So it's not exactly far-fetched to believe that these technologies are being researched or implemented or even exist in a testing phase right now.
Exactly, mate. And I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to go too in depth. I know we could do a whole episode on that, but I just wanted to, you know, explain the notion that, as you mentioned, General, the same thing happened with the eugenic societies in Australia when Hitler and this great narrative of the perfect race come out. All of the eugenic societies all disappeared and then reinvented themselves as all of these new programs and all of these new policies and procedures have all come in. And now we've got these oligarchs that are talking about the future world while all of this happens before our eyes. And yeah, I just wanted to touch on that because, you know, when we talk about the fluoride, we talk about the food, it's the same people doing it that did it out in the open 100 years ago. They've just rebranded themselves and they're still heading towards this so-called utopian world that they envision. And I know it's a big topic, but I just wanted to quickly touch on that because I thought it was important. And yeah, there's good articles on my website, tottnews.com, realnewsaustralia.com, touching on these things. And, you know, it's just important to get the people, I think, to have a deeper think about why some of these things are happening and not just look at the surface stories as well.
It's not just by chance. I mean, everything folds back to an agenda. It all has a starting point and a motive. And their motive is they have eugenics ideals that they want to follow, and in order to do that they need to put in certain plans and procedures in place, which is what we're seeing right now. I mean, you, like we talked about how you know, like Planned Parenthood, for example, was started by Bill Gates's father. You know what I mean? So Bill Gates's father was a eugenicist. You know, he was happy to admit it. He was a known eugenicist back in the day, and he was the head of Planned Parenthood. He started Planned Parenthood in the United States, which is all about, you know, contraceptives and abortions, you know, for people, for women who have fallen pregnant. You know, so I mean, they're all about curbing the population, you know, It doesn't get much more blatant than that. Yeah. So then you've got Bill Gates, who's everyone believes to be simply a computer nerd, is now following his father's footsteps, and has been, you know, noted as saying in a TEDx talk or a TED talk on stage that if we can do a really good job with vaccinations, we can lower the world's population. You know, and that's almost verbatim. So I believe. Yep. Ethan, did you have any more to go on your topics at all? Or
no, I'm happy to throw over now. That's a good little segue there. Yeah.
Well, there we go. So into Andy, that. I do believe you might have had an article or two with regards to what Bill and Melinda Gates, the foundation, and what they're up to in terms of vaccines being used to as a tool for global depopulation.
Yeah, thanks, Lee. Bill and Melinda Gates, what charming people they are. I think, you know, they basically seem to get stuck into the third world because they have very, very weak governments, very, very easily manipulated, very easily bought. They don't have like a proper democratic sort of processes. They generally have, you know, like a quasi sort of dictator.
Open
to be purchased, exactly right. So we see these entities like the Gates Foundation landing in places around Africa. And case in point was the situation in Kenya, where 500,000 approximately people were sterilized through a vaccination program in that country. Quite horrific. And anyone who knows, that kind of culture, they gauge their wealth on their families and, you know, their children and that sort of thing. So if you sterilize a young woman, then you're basically taking her life away from her, really. It's quite a tragic thing to happen to those people.
Culture, isn't it, Andy, where they have big families because then there's more of a chance that, you know, more of them can survive and carry on, but they also have these big families to also help look after each other and, you know, in their own little villages and communities. But yeah, that's part of their culture, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, so, but it's the, you know, the sickening thing is the experimental drugs that they'll bypass and just drop straight onto these people.
Didn't Bayer? I remember that. Yeah, Bayer had, what was it? Was it? I think it was HIV contaminated blood or something. There was something like that that they couldn't get rid of it, in the Western world. So they donated it, or they sold it real cheap to like African nations or something like that as well to use, and they ended up infecting all these like tens of thousands or even maybe even a lot more people with. I'm pretty sure it was HIV. It was like HIV contaminated. I don't know if it was blood, but it was something like that, or plasma, perhaps plasma, maybe.
Was that in the movie Vaxxed?
Oh, it might have been. Yeah. Let's
have remember something.
I might do a quick search.
And it was banned. It was banned in the Western world, or in the US or the UK or something. So they simply just packed up all of the stock and just rolled it out into a third world country, you know, to make sure that they kept the profit levels. So these people, I mean, look, they don't give a shit about people at all. Everything is a business and mixed with politics and like we've already covered, like these eugenics programs. So
I found it. Here we go. Just while you're going, it says, this is even the Sydney Morning Herald, even. So mainstream media newspaper, May 23, 2003. Bayer kept selling drug that helped spread HIV. A division of the pharmaceutical company Bayer sold millions of dollars of blood clotting medicine for hemophiliacs, medicine that carried a high risk of transmitting AIDS to Asia and Latin America in the mid-1980s, while selling new, safer product in the West. There you go. So Bayer is responsible for selling a drug that helps spread HIV. So it wasn't a contaminated product, but they helped spread help the spread of HIV.
Yeah, I don't think it's the first time that that situation has unfolded. If it's banned in the Western countries, then they roll it out in the third world.
There we go.
Same as food and all the rest of it. If it's not fit for Australia, then generally they'll just stick a new label on it and shove it through the doors through PNG, so that they'll sell it in different markets to make sure that none of it is wasted. Lovely people.
I remembered another one too, Andy, and you probably recall this as well, but I think it was the 1960s and 1970s that it was the Salk polio vaccine that was contaminated with the simian virus 40, like SV40, the cancer virus, and then that was that so that they had that. The polio vaccine was laced with that particular cancer-causing, it was part of like the monkey's liver or kidneys or something or other, and that simian virus 40 was then put into polio vaccines and given to like millions of Americans in the 1960s and 70s.
And Australia.
Oh, there you go. And Australia, yep.
Yeah, millions of Australians were infected with these polio vaccines in the 60s. There's Sydney Morning Herald articles about that as well. Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember things off the top of my head. Yeah, I just thought of that then too. Yeah, so there's another way that vaccinations have not helped the population, of course, once again, but have instead indentured us and given us DNA to pass on more genes to our offspring and spread cancer throughout society to millions of people. And what happened with that? Does anyone know? Did you guys know? Was there any outcome? Was there any backlash? Were they allowed to continue? I'm not sure about that one.
Well, it was probably pushed under the carpet like they always do. I'll have to do some more research on it, Lee.
Yeah, but you remember that one though, don't you? The polio vaccine being contaminated with SV40?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I need to refresh myself on the history on that thing.
Where I first saw that. I'm sure it was in the documentary or something.
Be very, very interesting to do a little show on the polio fraud.
Well, speaking on the Australian one, I've got the Sydney Morning article here. It says a federal government agency knowingly released polio vaccine contaminated with a monkey virus in the 1960s. That has since been linked to a range of cancers, said the virus contaminated at least four batches of vaccines totaling almost 3 million doses in Australia between 1956 and 1962.
Fuck.
And then it was an investigation. It said one batch contained about 700,000 doses of the contaminated vaccine, and it was on the grounds that, quote, much vaccine issued in the past was probably similarly contaminated as well. And it said Australia's leading experts on the virus, which is known as virus 40 or SV40, have found traces of it in human tumor cells and are calling for urgent funding to clarify the links. And then it just goes on to talk about, because this didn't come out until like 60, 70 years later, all that happened was the Australian Therapeutic Goods Administration, all they did was just release an apology and say, "Our bad, guys. Sorry about that." And all of these batches were contaminated. It's unbelievable.
Wow. It literally is.
I'll make sure that the people who were contaminated are all dead first before they start publicly announcing anything.
Yeah.
Same as what happened with asbestos.
Like this article came out in 2004, and this happened between 1956 and 1962.
Yeah,
that's how long it was.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable.
Makes you wonder too, boys, that with the massive increase in the vaccination schedule now, they're putting so many more vaccines into a, or they want to put more and more vaccines on the schedule so that anyone who's born from now onwards is going to be pumped absolutely full of these things. Who knows how clean these doses are? Who knows how contaminated they are? Who knows where they're... I mean, these are all... They're almost predominantly made in, you know, Asian countries like China, who are producing massive amounts of these vaccines. Wasn't there a scandal recently where some of their vaccines were tainted or something, and there are repercussions? I'm sure I saw something just recently.
Saw that. Today,
yeah. How
yeah.
One of, I'm sure I shared it actually. One of their,
there was like big pharmaceutical, they were like fake, hierarchy. Weren't they?
Yeah, there was something like, oh fuck, I can't remember the details. Folks out there should have a look and try and look for themselves. But yeah, there was Chinese pharmaceutical company manufacturing vaccines, something happened, went, you know, big batches bad, gone or something, and then now heads are starting to roll over that. Like, he's now been stood down, or he's fired or something or other. But I mean, the motherfucker needs to be taken off the face of the earth, whoever was behind that one. But it just goes to show you that, you know, these are the companies that are producing our vaccines, and they get sent over
absolutely
here, spread around the nation, so they can't pinpoint it to one particular sort of little small batch or area, because that's how they work. You know, that's the modus operandi of these big pharmaceutical companies. They, you know, if one particular, it might be a, say, a batch of 100,000 injections is contaminated, they won't send it to one city so they can narrow it down if something does go wrong. They will spread the batches randomly across, you know, an area, like a nation, so that, you know, if something does go wrong with a particular batch, they can't, it doesn't look like it's isolated into one particular area, so then people can then narrow it down and say, oh, all of these folks had that same vaccine, it's the vaccine. That's how they cover their asses. You know, they send it randomly all around the place so that they can't be tracked back to them. So I don't know if folks out there were aware of that, but that is modus operandi. That was from a whistleblower within one of these companies, that pharmaceutical companies that stepped forward and said that. But look, it just goes to show you, boys, there's all of these avenues that we, and there's probably even more that we haven't even touched on, that all tie back. If you look at the reason why, you think to yourself, but why would they do that, or why are they doing this? You know, oh, well, the reason is these big power brokers and the people who are responsible for this they're all part of the same groups and the same. I can't think of the right word there, but they're all in it together, basically, and they have the same ideals, which is to reduce the world's population. I mean, you know, like we hear on the Georgia Guidestones, you know, they want to reduce the world's population back to 500 million or something that we saw on there. Hey, didn't I send you guys something? I did too. I think I kept the webpage open. Remember I sent you that website that showed what the projection was for the world's population?
Yes, that's right. That was very interesting.
It was, yeah. I think I've got it here. There's a website, and folks can go out there and look at this themselves. These aren't, they're not tied into, like, they do have a statement on their page that says they're not tied into any particular government agency or whatever, like they're an independent body that does, you know, does the research and whatnot. It's, I'm pretty sure it's deagel.com, deagle.com. And I'll just bring this up now so I can just quickly touch on it for folks. And they do, like, I think they're a defense industry type of website. Guide to military equipment and civil aviation. That's sort of their background. But funnily enough, they have a section on their website where they have global sort of population forecasts for every country in the world. And I can't seem to find the link there on their page, but I'll search it now. Population. And if you look at the population for a lot of the main, or all the countries around the world, I think it's for, do you remember the year it said? Was it 2020 or 2025? Something like that. The population was set to drop.
Yeah, 2025, I think it was.
Yeah, I think it was 2025. Yeah, I think you're right, 2025. Yeah, deal. I'm struggling to find the page now. I had it on my phone, and I must have bloody closed that tab. Jeez, I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
When you do that, you're like, oh, no. I'll save that one. And then you, not long after. Oh, here we go. Population. I think I found it. Yep, here we go. So this page on their website, they do have a massive couple of paragraphs worth of a statement underneath. It says there have been many questions about the country's forecasters, especially the one focusing on the United States of America. They won't be answered by one, but you can find some explanation, thoughts, and reflections. We're going to keep this as short as possible. And I've gone on to read all about that there. But they're basically saying that the world's population, and I think Australia was on like page 3 from memory. Yep, here we are. So this company forecasts Australia's population to go down to 15 million. It's currently sitting at 23.2 million as of whenever this was done. And it is, so that was based on year 2017 numbers. So the forecast is for 2025, yep, like you said, Ethan. And Australia, they've got our population to drop down to 15 million. And there's only a few sort of third world type countries whose populations actually go up a little bit. You know, like little small Asian countries, their populations go up a little bit. Some South American countries, you know, their populations go up a touch, like only a little bit, maybe a million or so. So maybe normal growth. Whereas you look at your Western nations, even the UK, for example, this is quite a shocking one. They forecast the UK population by 2025 to be 14.5 million from 65 million. Let's go have a look at the United States. There we go. United States, 326 million currently. They forecast that to drop down to 99.5 million. So it kind of makes you wonder why.
Can I just jump in there quickly, Lee?
Yep.
I don't understand that thing. Like our Australian population has like been ramping up like exponentially in the last few years. So what are they putting this down to?
I think they're putting this down to a fact that there's going to be some sort of cataclysmic event,
right,
whether it's some sort of viral strain or who knows what. But it's just funny, like, you know, why would you go to so much trouble? And they've even got, you know, estimated GDPs and all this sort of stuff for the every single nation listed here as well. Why go to all this trouble if on a hunch, you know, or what if there was some sort of virus that took, you know, like a global flu pandemic, like the Spanish flu type thing? Yeah, what if that happened? Let's go to all the trouble. Let's punch in the stats and work out what would happen if that was the case. Well, you wouldn't just do that. Mm. Like you would only do this if you were seriously considering, or if you seriously thought or had information that would lead to this avenue of thought and doing all the homework and putting all this in. I mean, China, for example, is probably one of the only ones that doesn't move very much at all. It goes down a fraction. India's actually goes up.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So they remain untouched. Again, a few of the Asian nations, Pakistan goes up a little bit. Indonesia goes up a little bit. Russia's goes down a little bit. You know, but main Western countries like USA, UK, and you got Australia and all these other countries like us, we have these massive drops in population that they're forecasting in not very long time. And we're nearly in 2019 and they're forecasting this for 2025. So watch this space, folks. You know what I mean? I've actually pulling up an article too, boys. Bill Gates warns we should seriously prepare for a disease that could kill 30 million people in just 6 months. So when I found this, so that's when I saw that Deagle website, I remember that one. I started thinking to myself, I'm sure Bill Gates has made some claims in the past about how he thinks the world's population is going to drop. And sure enough, I managed to find an article saying, and this was from him. He believes that, you know, a flu-like disease or something could spread very quickly. You'll end up with pandemics in a matter of days, and before you know it, the world's population can dramatically change. I mean, he says only like 50 million, but I think the number he really believes would probably be a lot higher than that. 50 million is probably not too much. When you, it's still a big number, of course. But I mean, didn't Mao wipe out more than that in his own people when he was taking control of China? You know what I mean? That was just the government killing people. But yeah, look, it's interesting, boys, that we're talking about depopulation. Here you have this defense style type company named, you know, called Deagle, and they're forecasting world populations. It's a little bit strange, but there you go. DEAGEL.com. For folks listening, people should check that one out. Yeah. But
very interesting.
I might just quickly say my little epilogue thing at the end here, boys, and you can tell me what you think about it. These are my sort of personal thoughts on population. So I'll just read this out for you guys, because we're probably going to have to wrap this up shortly. So here we go. This is my humble opinion. The planet is not overpopulated. It's poorly managed. The wealthy and powerful don't see money as an issue, especially when they create it out of thin air via the banking cartels that they own. When money isn't an issue, what do you focus your attention on? The answer? The planet. The thing is, they've spent so many decades running society into the ground for their own monopolistic ideals. Humanity has had to simply adjust just to cling to life. Humanity will survive even if the quality of life is at its lowest point. We have an unbelievable ability to adapt, but at what price? What price has been paid? We have been largely rounded up and corralled into large cities because of how our society has been shaped around us, and it is to our demise. The cities and major urban areas do tend to be overcrowded, yes, but when you get a grasp as to the vastness of our planet, you'll see that there is so much to go around. But artificial scarcity is used to keep us from thriving and keeping in harmony with our own planet. If we take a look at smaller tribal cultures around the world, we can see that it is achievable to thrive when we keep things on a smaller scale. Growing our own food, creating our own energy on a smaller scale, and keeping in harmony with the natural world around us is key. If we want to avoid the catastrophe of facing the globalists' depopulation plans, then we need to take matters into our own hands and get back to our traditional roots. Anarchy and agorism aren't dirty words. Alternative systems must be looked at if we are ever going to break the cycle. So that's my thoughts on that anyway, boys.
Yeah, well said, General. I completely agree right there. It's and it's good, and it's empowering to have that spin on it. You know what I mean? We do have the power to avoid these type of things, and you do have the power to not go through the fluoridated systems, through other things like their education system, their health system, all of these things that they've designed around us. You don't have to go through all of these things. And I think that is definitely one of the most important points to take from it, is that we can educate ourselves to see what the agenda is, to see where this is heading, and to do what we can to not only individually go back to our roots, but also collectively try to find solutions to obviously break this system of control that's leading us to obviously something that resembles Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. So I completely agree, General, that we do need to take back our own thoughts and our own personal freedoms with these things, and obviously resort back to where we originally come from.
Yeah, that's why I said, you know, I mean, people think anarchy is a dirty word. People think, whenever, you know, we're taught to think that anarchy means, you know, collapse and societal unrest and, you know, cats chasing dogs, you know, that sort of thing, quoting Ghostbusters there. But anyway, but I mean, if you actually look up the term anarchy, anarchy is basically a society or a group of people or whatever else, or, you know, that rejects hierarchy. So we don't want this hierarchy system where it's a top-down control. You know, it's self-governance, basically. And the same with agorism. You know, agorism is more of a libertarian sort of philosophy that advocates creating a society in which all relations between people are voluntary exchanges by means of counter-economics. So, you know, everything is a voluntary exchange. So if you want, you know, say you want you know, power for your home, well, then you need to go and exchange something in order to get that power. Maybe you need to go and do some some work, or maybe you grow food and you go and provide food for whoever provides the power, so you can now have power as well. And you know what I mean? So it's that voluntary exchange. It's a voluntary system, whereas we don't have a hierarchical control over us, nor do we have a mandated system of control over us. It's a voluntary system. You know what I mean? So these aren't, again, these aren't dirty words, and I do believe that these are other types of systems that could be explored and could be used, and I do think that they could work, but they need to be implemented on a smaller scale, and I'm pretty sure there are societies and groups and communes of people that are out there that are trying to do this almost as an experiment, and they are living this type of life now, right here. I'm not sure. I think you're in America or possibly in England somewhere. But this is the way they live their lives. And it's similar, I guess. I mean, you could call them, the Amish had that sort of system, I guess, but maybe not to that degree. But I mean, they still survive to this day. You know what I mean? So, and they're trying to live their own lives in their own way. But all the power to them. Go for it. I mean, lucky them. that's how I feel, I guess. Mm. But I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, there's groups in the Northern Rivers that are doing that quite successfully now.
Well, there you go.
It's a real movement. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, living together and
relying on each other. And yeah, exactly. And people with certain skills, they can share skills amongst each other. So, you know, maybe you've got a chippy that lives there who can then pass his knowledge and skills on to others. And yeah, that's awesome to hear that people are doing it. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, just try and live as naturally as possible. If you can grow some food yourself, start doing that. Make sure that you don't drink town water directly from the tap. Don't, you know, like, so many things. Make sure that you look very, very closely at vaccination. Do your own research on that. Come up with your own conclusions. Don't accept what a GP tells you to do. Do your own, open your own minds to what's going on with all of that stuff. Food, stay away from fast food, mass-produced food. Try and turn off your Wi-Fi, as much as you can. Stay away from TV, which I reckon is the biggest mind control. It's absolute rubbish. Don't feed your kids television. Yeah, they're just some of the things. Like, start living like a natural human being. That's my two cents anyway, boys.
Mm. I can just Very see well
you,
said.
I can just see you now, Andy, sitting there in the nude, contemplating life like that.
Have you
in your natural state?
Oh, I've left my webcam on.
Nah, well said, mate. It's good advice, and. Yeah, I think that's some wise words there from yourself, Andy. Ethan, what do you reckon, mate?
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself, General. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Well, folks, I'm pretty sure that just about wraps up this podcast, the depopulation agenda. There definitely is an agenda out there to reduce the world's population and to keep us from actually thriving. They've got it stuck in that system, and like Andy was said, there's plenty of things we can do to get out of it, but it's on us. We're the ones that have to do it. All we can do is bring that information to you. It's up to you guys as to what you do with it. Any final thoughts, fellas?
Stay vigilant, everyone. Do your own research and make sure that, as Andy said, you try to live your life away from narratives, away from control, and just truly live a spiritually empowering and healthy life. That's my final thoughts, General.
Thanks, mate. Yourself, Andy?
Love your neighbours, love your family. You know, introduce yourself, build little groups bit by bit. If you don't know your neighbours, go around and introduce yourself. Get to know and make sure everyone's all right, because you know, the system of control is going to ramp up more and more and more, and we're just going to need each other as it comes on. You know, and get to know people, help each other out. Everyone's got a little skill, and you know, if that documentation on the population is remotely accurate, then we really will need each other in the times to come. So, yeah, you know.
Yeah, good call.
That's good for me. I'm off to PNG on Wednesday, so I'm going to be living in a very, very natural little village out in the back there. So where there's no vaccines and there's very little GMO and water is straight off the roof. So I'll come and report on that in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, cool. Nice. All right. Well, that pretty much wraps up the podcast, guys. And thanks again to the folks out there who are starting to listen. We've got quite a few more downloads of the podcast now. Each episode seems to be doing quite well. There's a few people liking the episodes. They're sharing it. We've got a few more followers now on Podbean. So it is starting to gain momentum, and it's thanks to you guys out there. We do appreciate our followers and our listeners. All we need is for you guys to help spread the word. We've got about 15 dedicated followers now on Podbean itself, but doesn't actually tell you how many subscribers there are on, you know, platforms like iTunes. Unfortunately, it doesn't provide that information, but yeah, we've had a few good comments from some of the folks as well who do listen to each episode. So thanks again, and make sure you subscribe and share the podcast on social media, guys, and let's get this information out there to the rest of the world. Guys, thanks for joining us on the Depopulation Agenda. Andy, Ethan, good night, and we'll catch up again soon for the next one.
Thanks, everyone.
Night, General.